Project Sapien is a podcast meant to engage our brothers and sisters in the law enforcement and military communities in conversations we all know we need to have. All opinions you hear are our own and are protected by the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. They in no way reflect or are meant to reflect the opinion of any specific agency, officer, or service member. Some opinions may be controversial. Listener discretion is advised.
Project Sapient coming in heavy right now.
I like it, man. This is good. This is a good mix coming the last few weeks, brother. You are crushing it on the playlist.
Hell yeah.
Keeping it in that number one law enforcement military podcast standard. We are back thanks to our tens of thousands of listeners, and thank you for all the positive feedback and question submissions for this week for season three. We are full send, and it would not be possible without all of our partners and supporters, starting with our good friends at AAA Police Supply. Our law enforcement listeners listening right now, and you're looking for a one-stop shop for supplies and duty gear, you need to look no further. Head to AAApoliceSupply.com. That's AAApoliceSupply.com, and use the code HYBRID10. For 10% off every single order you make, every single time you make an order. That's not a one-time code. Every single time. Big, big thanks to our friends at the Havoc Journal, the voice of the veteran community, focusing on current affairs and articles of interest to the public in general, but really the veteran community specifically, for independent news that gets to the facts on everything from geopolitics, science and tech, finance, contemporary affairs, art, and entertainment. Head over to HavocJournal.com. And while you're there, make sure and check out our partners at the Profile in Havoc podcast as well. Huge thanks to our friends at the Second Mission Foundation for educating, elevating, and advocating for our service community, helping them find their second mission after government service. Head to secondmissionfoundation.org for more information on what you can do to get involved and help them with the mission, along with our friends right down the road from you, sir, at 22 Mohawks. 22 Mohawks is combating veteran suicide by providing assistance to veterans needing the help navigating the reentry to the civilian world when they return home from duty. To learn more, head over to 22mohawks.com. We also want to thank our good friend who's been a very busy guy lately, Kyle Lamb and his company, Viking Tactics, the best tactical gear anywhere. From battle belts to slings and everything in between, Kyle's company offers the elite selection of high-quality, battle-proven tactical gear guaranteed to be ready for you when you need it every single time the job calls for it. Check them out at VikingTactics.com. And of course, we want to thank our friends at the Overwatch Project. We all know that suicide is often an impulsive decision, with research showing the majority of survivors saying they thought about it for less than 10 minutes, and firearms are the most lethal tool there is. The Overwatch Project's aim is to put some time and distance between our person in crisis and that tool by doing one simple thing, just fucking asking the question, do you have a plan for your firearms when you're in that dark place? Can we make one together? And will you be my buddy and help me with the same? Head over to overwatchproject.org for more information on how to form workable plans of action and how to just fucking ask. Iman, another week, and man, we've had a lot of shit happen in the last week, and we're gonna kind of get deep and into it today. We had some great Q&A requests from people asking legitimate questions on, and I would even say, well, one of them in particular is a little bit contentious, which I like, because I got no problem educating, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But that's this episode for those who might be a newer listener, and we just keep picking people up left and right every week. This one's going to be a little bit different than what I think people are expecting, because we do a really good job of, in our opinions, of trying to educate people. But a lot of the podcasts that I guess you could say would be not competitors, because we're all on the same team, they tend to want to shy away from stuff like what we're going to talk about today. And I'm pretty pumped for this, because it's hard conversations, you know, and like we say in the disclaimer, like, it's not always stuff that people want to hear, but it's what they need to hear.
Yeah.
And I'm just super pumped, because man, it's been a wild week since our last episode.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, some of the questions, or majority of the questions, are always about tactics, you know, what do you guys think of this tactic, that tactic, or how, you know, situational based type questions. And we figured this episode we'll talk about those things, you know, tactics and what are pretextual stops and what does it look like when a uniform officer pulls you over versus 10 detectives.
Right.
Very, 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 very different.
Well, and also, you know, for whatever reason, the last week, I mean, there are reasons, but and I did give you my disclaimer of a little bit of soapboxy stuff here, but we're both on the same soapbox. This is a challenge to everybody who's out in the law enforcement training space or in the law enforcement social media commentary space that is a law enforcement officer or has been at one time. Basically, if you're in the business of training cops, shut the fuck up and stop talking shit about cops that can't do their fucking job as though that's the fucking standard.
Yeah.
It's so overwhelmingly clear that they're trying to sell the negativity to, you know, for their training and their courses and whatever by showing the 1/1,000,000th of 1% example of cops that are dysfunctional.
Yep.
And the flip side is they've got great social media presence, right? And so they're out there spreading this message. And so what do people see that don't know shit about fuck? Oh, cops are all incompetent, fat pieces of shit. Like, that's all they see.
Yeah.
Because that's what they keep selling, you know, because they think, oh, well, negativity sells and we're going to bully these, you know, deficient officers into training hard, right? Yeah. By peer pressure.
Exactly.
How's that work for you?
Yeah.
You know, what do you see with firefighters? You don't see a bunch of fat and competent firefighters on social media. No, you see them fucking fit as shit, climbing ladders and saving kittens. Mm-hmm. They're always the fucking heroes, right?
Well, yeah, I got to
say PR. Man, the fire department, PR, they're so good at their job, right? Yeah. Everyone loves a firefighter. We know, all of our fire family knows too. There are incompetent, out of shape people who should not be on the field in the field in that position, just like there are in PD. But there are statistical, you know, an abnormality. But when you look at social media, firefighters are always showcasing the best examples of training and rescues.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just become this like shitty spiraling standard of law enforcement training and agencies that are in that business to showcase piss poor policing tactics that are 1/1,000,000th of 1% of the 99 point, whatever nines after that percentage of cops are doing a good job every fucking day. So that's just a quick, you know, on the front end, anybody that's listening with us that, you know, if that's you, knock it off, start showing some of the good fucking work. Stop showing all the fucking one-off examples of shit that people are doing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of videos, we're going to get started with this first one here, and it's going to be about 6 seconds long. It is very quick. And like I said, we will talk you through it. So what this is I don't know which police department this is. This is a old video, and it's a video I found, dash cam video I found 10 years ago, I think, even maybe a little longer than that. And it's a great video highlighting situational awareness with this officer, and you'll see what I mean. So I'm going to play it, and then we'll explain it after, and then we'll have a little discussion about it. All right, so here we go.
So for the folks that are at home, essentially what you have here is you have an officer responding to a call. He's on scene, and you've got a suspect, which at the time, you know, this wasn't somebody that was being detained or anything else. It was just an officer contact on an initial call. That individual presents a firearm. The officer, rightfully and in extreme level of awareness, is able to neutralize that individual simultaneously. As he's shooting, there's a guy running around the corner of the house, running right at the officer. And if you roll that tape and people that are able to watch, there's a guy, he hears the shots. He comes running towards the gunfire. Yep. Props to him. I mean, most people would be running the other direction, right? Clearly he's, you know, aware and around this either neighbor or family member or whatever, but he comes running at the officer, and the officer, you know, turns, sees it, presents on him, identifies immediately this is not a threat. He has empty hands. He's literally just a, for lack of a better term, kind of a dipshit running at a gunfight with nothing in his hands, and panicked.
Yep.
The officer did not. He gets off the X. That was a huge thing there. So he, you know, perfect engagement, gets off the X, moving offline, and then is able to maintain that level of awareness, not with, you know, losing focus or vision of any kind, having just been in a gunfight from a guy who came ready to go, right? I mean, this guy was the bad guy.
Yep.
for our terms here. He came ready to go. I mean, he had a concealed handgun in his chest. The cop had inclinations, clearly, because, you know, he's got his hand near his firearm, and the guy pulls it out as he's trying to walk away and surprise the officer. And the officer, I mean, it was perfect. He draws, pushes off, gets off the X as he's drawing and firing out of the holster, and puts the guy down. And all of this happens in less than about 3 seconds, inclusive of the guy running around the corner right at the officer, right after this just happened. I mean, that, you know, you could the science would say that it would have been not justified, but understandable why he might have shot at the second guy, because he's coming at him and presented a threat and all those kinds of things, right? But it's still the wrong decision. He doesn't make the wrong decision. He makes the right decision because he's trained.
Well, that's the thing. This is such a great example of what it's like for a cop who actually trains, takes their training seriously. So as I'm playing it back and forth, we're doing a little slow-mo thing. You see the guy reach into his jacket to pull that firearm out. You see the cop notice it, and you could see how his hand is already on his gun as they're walking, because I'll tell you what this looked like to me. All right, there's a kid sitting back here. I'm assuming some sort of domestic or some sort of call. He had to show up, taking this guy off to the side to go talk to him away from the witness over here, right? So which happens all the time. Like, hey, can I talk to you over here for a second? Now, it all depends on what you do. Some cops let the bad guy walk right behind them, which is very complacent of you to let anyone walk behind you, especially in uniform, right? Or at any time, actually, for that matter. And then, you know, he takes him off to the side to say, hey, let's have a conversation. Guy goes right into his jacket, does not hesitate much, and the cop sees it. What I love is this strike right here. He hits the gun hand right away, right away, at the same time unholstering his firearm, right, as they're back, boom, 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 maybe three or four shots. Guy goes down. Then he goes over the radio. Says shots fired, looks to his right, sees the other kid stops. You're talking, this is situational awareness. So what this is the cop subconsciously in his head knew that the kid was sitting over there in the stairwell. He knew that maybe that is a threat, quote unquote, right? What we'll call that. Quote unquote, threat one, quote unquote, threat two. Threat two went down, threat one, you know, in his head, he still has that memory of that kid sitting there. And that's why he turned so quickly to face that kid. And you could tell he's seeing him off his peripheral vision running, which is great managing that tunnel vision, right? I mean, that's huge right there. But this does not happen when a cop goes to the range once or twice a year.
Shooting static targets in a straight line. No.
Yeah, this does not happen this way. So this is, you know, a great example of what it looks like when you're doing an interview talking, but then it goes south, and how it works, right? So this is a great video. You got anything to add on that one, Jake?
No, just for civilians that might be watching, people who have not had a lot of interface with officers, watch that video and just see how quickly that happens, and count the seconds out on the, I mean, we freeze frame it in slow motion and all that stuff because you can see frame by frame. Kid turns the corner, cop presents on him, and then the next frame, his hands come out like, I don't have anything in my hands. Holy shit, you just shot so-and-so. And the cop identifies that, right? Now play that in real time back again and take it through yourself. Just visualize yourself going through that and what you think, you know, because we got a lot of armchair quarterbacks out there, and look at that video and see how quickly these things happen and understand how freaking difficult this job is.
Yep.
And that level of training is to get to that level of competency and make it look as I'm not going to say as easy as he made it look, but to make the very difficult thing look that clean takes a lot of training. A lot of training.
Yep. So here's this next video. This next video is out of Surprise, Arizona.
No pun intended.
Yeah. When I first read the description, I'm like, surprise. What do you mean? Surprise.
Yeah, surprise.
Surprise, Arizona officer. Oh, Surprise PD. Got it.
Yeah.
All right. So this is very, very recent video. I'll play you. It's about a minute long. We'll play you the 911 dispatch call and, you know, the whole video. You guys listening in the car, just listen. We'll give you a quick play by play after the video, so you guys have an idea of what's going on. So let's play this video.
And who's arguing?
My friend is keep on arguing and having me up all night, and I just keep on.
You sound really muffled, so I cannot make out much of what you're saying.
My parents are keep on arguing, and they're like keeping me up all night, and it's just being annoying.
Do you know if there's any weapons inside the home at all?
No, I don't think so. I think they're just like regularly arguing, but like sometimes they do this, and it just gets out of control sometimes and stuff.
Trying to hit me.
Hey, sir. Stop. Sir.
Don't come in. Don't come in, boss.
Wait,
don't
go.
Don't go. get an AR.
No! No!
No! 99-998. I got one male subject down. He has an AR-15.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about that going sideways, right? Right away. We'll play it back. So if for you guys, so what you heard was the voice was distorted. It was a juvenile, so a young age, calling 911. His parents were fighting. And the cop walking up can hear screaming, right? You hear the screaming, you hear the screaming. So, yeah, you're moving, right? As she comes out of the the house, she says, he strangled me, right? Or he was strangling me, something like that. She gets out of the house. Now, with her being gone, who's left?
The kid,
right? So the cop
presumptively. The cop has to assume that, right?
Yeah, the cop has to assume that, oh, no, there's a kid still in there. I need to go in because he already tried strangling mom. Now it comes, you know, those priorities of life, right? Innocent cop suspect. So he goes in, and right away, once he goes in, you see the dad shirtless in the corner at the kitchen area. And right here, he shot. Boom, 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 quick, right? I timed that shooting. It was 0.22 milliseconds by the time from when he broke holster to the first shot. That is freaking fast.
Quick.
All right? Now, when you first watch the video, let's say you know nothing about what's going on, and you first watch the video, you're like, oh, shit, he just shot this dude for no reason, right? Take out the sound, take out everything else. The guy had it wasn't an AR. It was actually a shotgun. It was a shotgun. I get it. His adrenaline's high. He sees a rifle, right? Doesn't know if it's here's the thing. If you're hiding like a Mossberg 500 behind your leg, which that's what this guy was doing, sure, the butt end, you could perceive it to be an AR. That's very easy to mistake in that. But also at the same time, when your adrenaline is flowing, rushing, you get into that shooting, he's going to call out AR, which is fine. You know, no, that's not a big deal. But I think what the biggest thing I want to point out here is how quickly these verbal domestics go south. And we all know domestics are some of the most dangerous calls that we go to as cops, as law enforcement. And it drives me crazy when I see guys and gals, cops, pull up right to the house. You know, basically, why don't you put your cruiser in the driveway while you're at it?
Yeah, right? On the X.
Exactly, on the X. This cop seemed like he was walking, which tells me he probably parked a little bit and then walked to the house, which is always a good thing. Now, the question was asked by the 911 operator, is there any weapons in the house? And the kid says, I don't think so. To me, there's always weapons in the house.
Exactly.
You go into a kitchen, look at all the butcher knives. Every single one of those is a weapon. So to me, when asked, are there any weapons? And let's say dispatch, I get it. Dispatch have to ask those questions. The dispatch were more concerned about guns. But here's the thing. In reality, there's always a weapon. Never, never, ever, ever assume going to these things, there's never a weapon. There's always a weapon being, you know, that the individual can just pick up and throw at you or do whatever. So now,
and with that too, you know, people nitpick a little bit on this and they'll say, well, he shouldn't have gone in or he shouldn't have done XYZ. It's like the unfortunate part is that in the real world, on real calls, especially domestics, especially in residential, and this was for those who are listening, haven't got a chance to see the video. This was a house. It's a, you know, single family residence. It wasn't an apartment complex, which yep. just kind of makes things a little more complicated, actually, of all things, when you're in an apartment complex, because, well, let's go through walls, you know, mm-hmm. things happen, right? You've got lots of other residents to have to be concerned with, not just, you know, somebody who, so this one, it's in a contained box, so to speak.
Yep.
But there will be, and there are people who have said, you know, he shouldn't have gone in, he shouldn't have done X, Y, Z, you know, this, that, and the other. And it's like, well, okay, not every call and not every interaction do you get the choice of a good choice and a bad choice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
More often than not, you get bad and bad.
Yeah,
so exactly. Which is the less bad?
Yeah.
It could come down to a morality choice for you as the officer. Bad in this situation is I am going into an unknown with, now I've got somebody who just ran out the, you know, the front door past me. He's solo responding, right? Obviously, yep. On domestics, you always want to have someone else with,
oh, yeah,
you. If you can,
yeah.
If you can, not everybody has that opportunity. You know, not everybody's got cover all the time, 24/7, especially in an exigent circumstance like this, where the kid is calling from a back bedroom. Okay. So now I'm forcing myself into this scenario to where it's like, I'm now in their home. I've got somebody who just went out behind me. My back is not covered by anybody. I've got this person in front of me. And on top of that, I've got a kid in the house that, as far as I know, is in one of the back rooms. Because as you watch the video, if you're just listening, when you watch the video, the main entry of the house is very clear. It goes into the living room, kitchen, and then all the bedrooms and everything are behind the suspect. And it's essentially the suspect is in between the officer and where there is presumptively a child who made the call. And you have to choose between your bads. Bad choice number one is going in by myself, because that sucks, right?
Yep.
Bad choice number two is dad who just assaulted mom who ran out the front door and left her kid behind now decides to go and harm the child. Which one are you going to live with?
Yep.
For me, for you, for everybody we know, we're always going to take the, I'm going to go in and, you know, as best I can, become the shield.
Yeah.
And not that it's, you're not aware of your own danger. It's there. It, you know, we're not superheroes. Everybody's, you know, it's like, I know this isn't awesome, but what is your, you know, moral fortitude, right? Are you running towards this or are you running away from it?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say people that choose to go out the door and wait for more people is a bad choice. It's just a different choice, right?
Because
you could have backed out, done a call out, surrounded the house. He's got a hostage, right? You go that route. I mean, that happens all the time, right? You're on the tactical team. You fucking know, right?
Yep.
That shit happens all the time too.
It does.
It's for those who are less than experienced in this, you know, as whether civilians or officers, it's not always good versus bad on decision-making. It can a lot of times be bad and bad or shitty and shittier.
Yeah.
And this officer had really, honestly, he had shit and more shit to choose from. And he chose the shit that put him in harm's way. But in his mind, which we happen to agree with, the best potential chance to save the kid in the back, or at least do everything he could to make that happen.
What I love in this as well is his not only situation awareness, but awareness of his weapon. His weapon actually went down and he tap racked and got right back into the fight. So all that happening in less than 5 seconds, right? And again, I go back to, this is training. This is what training looks like, right? Where I'm doing the quick slow motion. He fires one, two. Oh, there's the jam right there. Double field, whatever he had, recognize it right away. Back in the fight. I mean, that
must have been a Glock. Had to have been a Glock.
Yeah. Could be Glock. Could be SIG. All right.
No,
could be actually.
Definitely not a Smith.
Right. Right. But man, it happens so much, right? But that's the thing. We work type 1, type 2 malfunctions at the range, right? There's a reason. I mean, I told my officers when I showed this during roll call, there's a reason why we push them when it comes to like weapon jams or whatever, like, let's go, clear it, get back in the fight. You know, you're never done until you're done. Right. So that is a great example of, again, an officer that trains, you know, more than once, even if you sit dry fire, practice your emergency drills. Right.
Yep.
Doing dry firing. It's amazing how muscle memory occurs, you build that neuroplasticity when you're dry firing. And you know what? That keeps the melanin and all the little brain cells in your head working. That way, when shit hits the fan, you're like, oh, I remember doing this.
It's a positive automatic response.
Exactly.
And I, you know, we talk about it all the time. It's like, okay, how do you, you know, what do you base your training, or what do you base your standard, you know, with dry fire in particular? A lot of guys, I don't get it. I never understood it, but they think dry fire is a waste of time. And if it was such a waste of time, why would every single professional shooter, world champion shooter, including, and I don't know how we'd keep a scoreboard on this, but including all of our actual real world operators with legitimate numbers downrange, they all say the same. Chuck Ritter, literally, we talked about it in the podcast with Chuck.
Yeah.
Dry fire, 96% of the time.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, well, I don't think anybody's going to question Chuck. Nobody's going to question Kyle. They're not going to question guys like that, right?
No.
So if you're not dry firing, you're not literally working on the mechanics all the time. I mean, it costs nothing. It takes time.
Yeah.
Just take the time. Right.
Exactly.
And it results in things like this, where this officer, I mean, shotgun or rifle, either way, you know, he's undergunned, right, for that fight in that close proximity. That guy doesn't need to do much. He's going to cause some serious damage.
Oh,
and
100%.
I mean, that's a, you know, that's not a position I want to be in, but I also don't want to be in a position to where I, you know, go out the front door knowing there's a kid in the back, and that's going to be a whole other thing, right? So, you know, part of this episode today, we wanted to highlight some stuff based on some questions we had from folks, you know, on I guess what you would call kind of circling around, you know, where to find that line. We've talked about a lot this season between hypervigilance and then competency, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes down to where your mental state is and your training and how you handle stress and being on that. Another question that we got, and I think it kind of adds to it, it adds to the vigilance side, but it also it stands on its own, you know, a follow-up question or a second question from somebody. And it came in relatively contentious. I'm not going to put them on blast or anything like that, but it was a pretty contentious question asking, I'm paraphrasing here with the long rant, but, how do you guys justify shooting someone 96 times or whatever it was for not wearing a seatbelt? That was the question, right? Because yeah. They're seeing the news story. And then for those who are unfamiliar, in Chicago last week, there was a traffic stop with an officer pulled over a 26-year-old African-American male for not wearing a seatbelt.
Now, there's some things we're going to talk about, right? We're just going to show the initial video of what it actually looked like. I'm not too interested going into the shooting part, but what I really want to talk about is the reason for the stop was not really because of the seatbelt. All right. Just because
we want to highlight what a pretextual stop is exactly. With this video.
So the way it reads right now for you guys following along, this is on March 21, 2024, approximately 6:02 PM, five Chicago police officers pulled over 26-year-old Dexter Reed Jr. for not wearing a seatbelt. All right. We'll start there. The officers with weapons drawn repeatedly ordered him to roll down windows. We're going to stop right there to roll down his windows. And he ignored their commands. So we'll stop right there. This already tells me, without even watching the video, that this kid, Dexter Reed, was a subject of some sort of investigation, whether it was detectives, federal task force, whatever it might be. Cops just don't pull you over for a seatbelt with their weapons drawn, five of them.
In plain clothes.
In plain clothes. This is not a typical car stop for a seatbelt violation. I'm telling you, this is not, I know how media is spinning it, that they shot him because he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. No, that's right. That's not the reason why. So we're going to quickly watch the video. I'll put the video up on our show notes. It's 31 minutes long. It's the full version of the video.
It's the full version.
The media chopped up version.
Correct.
All right. So let's do this.
Roll the windows down.
The window down, man.
Roll the window down. What are you doing?
Roll up. Roll this one down.
Roll that one down too. Hey, don't roll the window up. Roll the window up.
Okay.
Do not roll the window up.
Hey, do not fucking roll.
Unlock the doors now.
Open the fucking door.
Unlock the doors now.
Open the fucking door.
Unlock the doors now.
Hey,
open the door now. Open the door now. Open the door now! Oh, 6-4 damage! Shots fired! Shots fired! Shots fired! Fernandon Avers! Fernandon Avers! 10-1! 10-1!
All right, we'll stop it right there. So, a lot to unpack. The officer, he shot at the officer. One of the officers was shot in the wrist. You can tell by the officer, the way he turned, and the backup officer, I guess I'll call him, who was off on the right. You see, let me see if I can grab it, get that.
And for those that are listening, a lot of these, you know, we go with police activity on YouTube. They have the whole unedited version, multicam, you know, the body officer cameras from multiple angles. That's partly why the video is so long, is it's got, I think, almost everybody who is there with their body cam. So you can see the various different angles. And that's really important because, you know, you get one perspective, right? You get the initial officer making the approach. And again, if you read the news clip, and part of what generated this question was the news was, you know, the he wasn't rolling down his windows, which were fully tinted. So how could they know that he didn't have a seatbelt on? Well, that's not accurate.
Yeah.
What's accurate is that he had his windows down and you can see through the front windshield, was stopped for not wearing a seatbelt. Again, pretextual stop, which we'll get into that in just a second. And then he actually did roll the window down, interface, and then became increasingly non-compliant,
yep.
Which also increased the officer's awareness of what things were going on inside the vehicle that he could and couldn't see, including his hand positions and everything else. And he shot an officer.
Yep.
It's, I mean, it, that gets, you know, bury the lead, right? Yep. Officer shot. Yes.
Okay, so, yeah, sorry. Let me just play the body cam, the second body cam, just so people have another perspective.
Do not roll the window up.
Do not fucking roll it up.
Unlock the doors
now. Open the fucking door.
Unlock the doors
now. Open the fucking door.
Unlock the door
now.
Open the door now. Open the door now. Open the door now.
That's the cop that I threw. I believe that's the cop that got hit in the wrist. Yep. But you could, so just the way, I mean, they're all positioned, right? You could totally tell this is not a traffic violation. Oh yeah. There's the cop that got wounded. I mean, there's a, I'm not,
it's a high risk traffic stop.
Exactly.
We train this.
Exactly.
Every department at least touches on this, right? We train this. You can look at the position, the pre-contact position of the officers, the staging, yep, the vehicle staging. Cause they knew he was, you know, they knew he was a potential, you know, to flee.
Yeah.
Again, we'll get into the actual individual. We'll break this down, you know, down the line when they release all the information surrounding it, you know, including the suspects, just all the details when that comes out, good, bad, and ugly. And just to clarify that, good, bad, and ugly, we're not sugarcoating anything, right? So pretextual stops. It was the bulk of the main question. Why do they get into a shootout over a guy just not wearing a seatbelt? It's not about that.
No.
That's also right. Or yes. And I guess is the way I usually like to say things. A pretextual stop, is literally, if you're driving down the road and you have expired tags, that is an indicator for a police officer. Hey, this person's got expired tags. There are a litany of reasons you could have expired tags.
Yep.
The overwhelming majority, 99 point, whatever percent of the time, it's because you forgot to go. You were too busy, whatever. Our video that we showed, the passenger side approaches, lady who was pulled over in Texas that they got hit by that truck.
Yes.
Right. That was a stop for expired tags, right? It's a fix it ticket or just a verbal warning. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But what people don't understand, if you have an outstanding warrant, you go on to DMV to get your tags renewed. The next person showing up in line behind you is the officer to arrest you. You can't renew registration. You can't do any government, act, you know, driver's license, vehicle registration, insurance. If you have an outstanding warrant, you walk in there and criminals know this, you're going to get picked up. Mm-hmm. Right. So a pretextual stop is, I see this person has expired tags. That gives me a reason justifiable, backed by case law and constitution, to stop this person and see what's going on. At that point, as the officer, I can choose how to go down the road, as can the suspect, the person who's being, you know, contacted. They can choose how they respond to.
Exactly. Right?
Again, the overwhelming majority of the time on those pretextual stops, it's a kick it, right? Hey,
yeah,
cool. Get it fixed. See you later down the road. You know, not looking for writing citations, looking for actual, you know, actual criminals.
So the other side of the pretextual stops, right? Now you have the one where you're doing the stop because you got a civil infraction, whatever, whatever. Now, when I was in drug unit, gang units, SWAT team, whatever specialized unit I was in, or still am in, when it comes to pretextual stops for a unit such as mine that I was in, we'll say drug task force, there's a reason we are stopping that car and going in heavy. That individual, 9 times out of 10, or actually 10 out of 10, is the target or a target of our investigation. He or she may be a runner. He or she may be a financer. He or she may be tied to the target somehow, but we know a lot about these targets that we go after before we actually go after them. There's a lot that happened behind the scenes before a pretextual stop happened. So I'll give you guys a quick example of one of my cases. It was a big drug case I was working involving meth pills and all kinds of stuff, right? So throughout the investigation, I realized that the main target is friends with somebody else in another part of the state. And that friend is my key to unlock a different, another source, so to speak, or another avenue to go after the main target. So we follow the target around for a little bit. We get the information of his friend, right? We type it all in. We find out, oh, he's got a warrant for his arrest. Perfect. So now this is what happens in the background that I'll clue you guys in on a little thing. I will call that jurisdiction's police department and I will say, hey, we're investigating so-and-so. This guy's tied to so-and-so. This guy has a warrant. I'd love for him to be picked up because I want to interview him. So now what do you get? You get half a dozen detectives, and you get three uniform patrol officers. 9 times out of 10, it's the uniforms that go and do the car stop, especially if they have the time. If there's no call pending or anything like that, they'll go do the stop for us. If they end up having to break off because they got calls, that's fine. We will take care of it. But this time, all the stars aligned, good to go. We roll up, and we follow him around for a minute just to see, get a pattern down. And then he rolls up to a local grocery store. And I said, perfect. Hey, take him down. Patrol guys go up. Stop him. Boom, boom. Under arrest. That's it. All people saw was uniform guys doing their jobs. They did not realize that there were 15 other detectives with their guns out in their cars in case shit went sideways. That's the one thing the common everyday civilian does not realize that happens almost every single day.
Yep.
Whether it's a shopping plaza or whatever. And it, you know, when I take, you know, brand new guys who got into the unit and take them out of one of our ops or whatever, they are so dumbfounded that people don't even realize what goes on around them right under their noses. Yep. So now let's shift it to Chicago. Now we don't know the whole case. We don't know what's going on with this case. We don't even know what's going on with this kid. But just looking at the way the cruisers were positioned, they were looking for this guy.
Yep.
They were looking for him for a very specific reason. Now, could they have intel that this dude had weapons? Maybe. Maybe that's why they already had their weapons drawn, right? And there's so much that needs to get unpacked with this video to include the case or whatever. Like I said, we're just outside looking in. We don't even know anything about the case. But what we saw is a high-risk traffic stop, right? Those are what are called felony car stops or high-risk traffic stop involving a dangerous or known criminal that they wanted to get. And unfortunately, that said criminal did not comply, shot at one of the cops, and yes, 96 bullets went into that car. But if you want to count 5 cops there, well, you're talking 10 rounds apiece. Yeah, I could see that happening. We're all... Yep. All 5, all 6 officers shoot into the car. Now, one, it's very, very dark. I get it. Tinted windows. Adrenaline's going. One of their own got shot. So they're all going to, you know, you also have sympathetic fire. You have all sorts of physiological
things
that also happen. So when the questions get asked, why did they shoot? Why did they have to shoot 96 times? Each officer perceived a threat in their own way. Each officer responded to that threat in their own way. It happens on an individual level. A lot of times, unless you work cohesively as a team and you're able to really narrow down who shot and who didn't, this was a very dynamic, fluid situation. Clearly, it was like, we need to get him now, right?
Yep.
They did the stop, did what happened. I'll be curious to see if anyone knows, you know, feel free to email us, projectsapien2020, at gmail.com. Send us an email. Let us know, you know, what it is, what the stop was really for. Because I'll tell you right now, it was not a seatbelt violation.
No, and we'll break it. Well, no, the pretextual stop was a seatbelt violation.
Well, yeah, no,
right?
I'm saying that's not
the whole point of for our listeners that are not necessarily educated in this, right? The way we see this video, that's exactly what we see because we understand what we're looking at. It's learning a foreign language.
Yeah.
If you think of it that way, right, as far as like the civilians that might be listening or the person that asked me that question. I'm gonna do my best to translate for you. This is a foreign language. This is what you're actually seeing. Okay.
Yep.
Again, we'll talk. If they're not justified or if portions of this were you know improper, we'll analyze that too, and we'll present it. To your case example of your stop, this one as well, and I'm going to read the executive summary just because it's legal, so it's really, really long, but you can look this up. 1996, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled pretextual traffic stops do not violate the Fourth Amendment right against unreasonable search and seizure. The Fourth Amendment affirms that police officers must have probable cause or reasonable suspicion that a crime has been committed to stop and search a vehicle. If the pretextual stop is a seatbelt violation, and then the officers are articulating that there is a crime being committed or has been committed or a known offender, that that justifies the search of the vehicle and the seizure of that person and their belongings. Okay. So if essentially, if the police do not find probable cause related to a crime during a pretextual stop, it is illegal for them to detain you and search the car. Okay. The officer's intention for the stop must be related to law enforcement and cannot be motivated by personal bias or discrimination. That is case law. That is constitutionally backed. Okay. So these are the rules in which we're playing, right? Yep. And for people that are looking at this video, not understanding, hopefully we're giving you some light to shine on understanding this is what a pretextual stop is. This is why you got stopped, because you didn't have a seatbelt violation, or yep. because you weren't wearing a seatbelt, which is a violation, or your taillight was out, or your tags were expired, all these other things. Okay. And then if they can get into it and they get to that point of checking all those other boxes, they have constitutional backing to make the stop. Yep. Now, that being said, we are not fanboys of poor policing. We are not glib to the real world that not everybody utilizes the tools at their disposal the right way. Okay. So using Chicago specifically, and this is in 2023. So last year, more than 51% of the drivers stopped in 2023 were African-American, nearly 31% were Latino, and 13.6% were white. 73% of all stops made by Chicago police last year resulted from a car registration problem or an equipment violation. So 73% of all of their stops were on pretextual stops.
Yeah.
Okay. So three quarters effectively. Okay. So the vast majority of those, and they didn't have the exact numbers because it's hard to, you know, cite and release and verbal warning and stuff don't, I mean, cite and release gets tracked, but like verbal warnings and things that don't get tracked.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, the presumptive is around 97% just get kicked, right? So of the 73% that were stopped because of an equipment violation or registration problem, 97, 98% of those get kicked, okay?
Yeah.
So both things exist at the same time. You have constitutional backing for this type of police activity, and action, right? Which is justified when it is justified, right? That doesn't excuse officers who've made choices to profile.
Yes.
Because that happens too.
It does.
So it's yes. And like we always say, yes. And both things happen at the same time. It all comes back to what kind of cop are you? What kind of cop do you want to be? And what kind of community officer do you want to be?
Exactly.
Does profiling exist? Absolutely. Is racism prevalent in law enforcement? Absolutely. Is racism prevalent, race upon its own, the same race? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that a couple of years ago in Baltimore, right? You had the beating of the suspect by officers that were all the same race as him.
Yeah. The five, right?
So
the five.
And so all those things coexist at the same time in this big, you know, massive shit that we all have to deal with 24/7 on the job. And it's an impossible Rubik's cube to solve, because you can't solve it.
Yep.
But if you can understand at least what you're seeing when you see it, like with this video in particular from Chicago, this is why we thought it was kind of important just to highlight, because it's a hot button topic right now. There'll be another one in 2 weeks. It'll be another hot, right? So these are all flashpoints.
Yeah.
But if you can start to understand the language in which, you know, we speak in law enforcement and translate that to what you're seeing on that video, what you're seeing is not somebody getting shot for not wearing a seatbelt.
Yeah.
Exactly. What you're seeing is a pretextual stop because it's a known suspect, or even possibly somebody that, you know, is literally, you know, there's a million different things that could be going on with that guy.
Yeah.
Or the vehicle.
Yeah.
Right. And at the end of the day, is he going to get shot if he doesn't pull a gun on him? Nope.
Yeah, exactly.
Just comply, which, you know, he was initially, but then he wasn't. And so it's like, okay, so what's going on? Right. Yep. So, you know, the purpose of this wasn't by any means to put anybody on blast, clearly. Like that's not what we're about, but it is to educate and inform and get people to understand, because it was an aggressive question asked, and they were pissed, and understandably so. But I think if they had a better idea and understanding of what they were seeing, and police do a horrible job of this, like the admin and departments, they release the body cam footage with no context. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
So the body cam footage is out there, and then you get news or whomever creating their own narrative around it. They don't speak the language either.
No, they don't.
So
they're just coming up with their own. That's why the news article is, you know, black man gets shot for not wearing a seatbelt. Well, there's a little more than that.
That's the headline. It's grabby. It's catchy. I saw it. I clicked it. I was like, oh, I'll read this. I want to see what that, you know, person says. And do they actually, you know, is it an attention grabber? Yeah. But with our attention span, you know, 15 seconds or less, man, that causes some real harm for officers in the field, because now the next person that interacts who may be coming off of reading that thing is, you know, not unjustifiably paranoid, but maybe they do something that they wouldn't otherwise do if they'd have known what was going on and you know, for real. So,
hopefully, that answers questions, and that you know, we'll do more of these as questions come up. I know the last one we did with the passenger side approach, it was pretty popular. But you know, we'll do more of these as we as the seasons go on. So, but this is what we got. It's a very, very dangerous world out there. Dangerous job as just all on its own. And we, you know, we, like myself, Jake, people in our circle, we love to AAR a lot of things.
Yeah.
And the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it, right? Everything. Because that's lessons learned. In the military, we AAR the shit out of every single thing we do. Why? Because it helps us grow. And not calling each other out on bullshit, especially in this profession, you see how sensitive some fucking guys are, which you're like, dude, get over yourself. Like, put your ego aside and actually learn. You know, learn, because you've never stopped learning.
Yeah. Well, if you want to be good at it, you don't. So
exactly.
That's the big thing. And we appreciate everybody listening. We also appreciate everybody that's helping us make this happen every week. Our good friends at AAA Police Supply. If you are out there listening right now on duty and you got something you need to replace, or you just want to upgrade some kit, head over to AAApoliceSupply.com. Use that code HYBRID10 for 10% off every single order you make. While you got some downtime tonight and do that reading that we talk about all the time, head over to Havoc Journal, the voice of the veteran community, focusing on current affairs and articles of interest. They are at HavocJournal.com, as well as our friends there with the Profiles in Havoc podcast as well. Big, big thanks to Second Mission Foundation for everything they do to help us and our community, educating, elevating, and advocating for our service community. Finding their second mission after government service, head to SecondMissionFoundation.org for more info, as well as our friends at 22 Mohawks. Head over to 22mohawks.com and look at all the initiatives they are working through to help combat veteran suicide, providing assistance to the veterans needing that help re-entering the civilian world. Big thanks to Kyle Lamb and Viking Tactics, the best tactical gear and battle-proven gear, guaranteed ready every time you need it. Head over to VikingTactics.com to find your next piece of kit. And then when you have that last bit of time, head over to OverwatchProject.org and our friends there to learn more information about how to form workable plans of action, helping us combat the suicide epidemic and learning how to just fucking ask. Iman, this was a tough one because, you know, tough topics, but...
Mm-hmm.
I'm here for it. Glad to be in this chair. Thank you, as always, for the opportunity. And hopefully it generates some discussion with some more people and get some more people thinking and keeping on down the road.
Hell yeah.
So everybody that's out there tonight working, we love all of you. We appreciate you, and stay safe.
Stay sapient.